Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Harold Cousins. We'll be sharing his experiences with the Learning Disabilities Association. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with the Learning Disabilities Association.
Well, I gotta tell you, that is a great little charity up there in Windsor, Ontario. I understand it stretches further, but that one branch in particular was great for me, and I know at least a dozen other people that were truly affected directly from their charitable work. And it was just great. They got me volunteering with just some small events, like when Henry Winkler came into town. That was pretty great. You're that event, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and then some yard sales and stuff like that. And then I was able to work my way into a great position as the adult recreational facilitator, which essentially means that I got people who normally choose not to be social. I had to bring them out, get them social, throw them in a chlorine-filled swimming pool, and have some fun.
So, were there any challenges in the work that you did for the LDA?
Quite a bit. Like I was saying, not too many people will choose to be social when they have a learning disability. Oftentimes, they are put aside in the classroom, and they get raised with a mistaking self-awareness, thinking that they're not able to have friends and such. So it was really, really hard. I had a phone list of 90 phone numbers that I would have to call to try to get out for a Thursday night swim. And on my Thursday nights, if I had 5 people, I was delighted. You know, I think the largest number we ever hit was 9, you know, out of 90. That was quite difficult there. Some of the behaviors were challenging and everything else, but overall it was a pretty great experience.
So, looking at the converse side of things, what was the greatest success you experienced?
Greatest success I experienced with the Learning Disability Association?
Yes.
I think the fact that I was able to turn that, you know, little recreational swimming group, we transitioned from that to rock climbing to even having a video game and pizza night at Stars of the Game, just across from the community college down there. I think that was probably the greatest success, was when I was able to convince you guys that we had to have a social night outside of our recreational night. So that, I don't know, that's my big feather in my cap for that phase of Learning Disability Association, I guess. You know, besides becoming friends with big power movers like you.
Thank you. You know. So, how has the transition affected you? Your time with the LDA, how has it shaped what you're now doing?
Oh, it was absolutely paramount for me. It gave me the chance and ability to understand better who these kids are. Like, for For the vast majority of my career, I've been working with severely behavioral autistic individuals. So, you know, they start off as kids, you know, but they do grow old. You know, autism is not one of those, it's not a disease, but you know what I mean? It's not one of those degenerative conditions that after time you eventually pass away from it. So it was really good for me to be able to learn how the 20-year-old, you know, autistic individual acts to better me understand the 14-year-old, then the 4-year-old, and so on and so forth. So it was great. It was absolutely amazing. I was able to kind of compare my clients, at least the first year, to a lot of the clients or a lot of the men and ladies that were joining us on our recreational trips. You know, oh, he's just kind of like Cam. Look at him go. A little flirtatious and a whole lot of personality. Okay, I know how to handle this kid. You know, stuff like that. There's a little Cam out there, too. Although his name is Charlie.
My sympathies to his parents.
Yeah. Don't think he has your wit, though.
So, anyway. So if you could send any one message about the need for equal inclusion in the community, what would you say?
We all have a right to enjoy what our ancestors have built, and we all continue to pay for it. And I think it's truly disgusting when people act so negatively towards, you know, individuals with learning disabilities or other, you know, more severe ailments using the facilities. Like, I've seen it. Sadly, I've seen where in the gym, people wouldn't use gym equipment after the handicapped kid used it because they thought that they're going to catch handicapped, you know, especially dwarfism. So many people are afraid that they're going to be touched and then turned into a bag of Skittles or something. So it's, you know, we need to include everybody. Everyone needs to understand that there's nothing wrong with these people. You know, like, it's amazing to me the fact that, you know, it's been so many years since the freak shows were running along the countryside, but people still act as if, you know, as if just a simple physical abnormality or mental, you know, difference in your mental processing would actually affect them, you know, in such a way. It's disgusting, really. But, you know, can't we all just get along, essentially? Like, come on. You know, his taxes pay for the swimming pool, too. And his father may have even done the electricity for the swimming pool. You know what I mean? Yeah. Let's hope it was a good job, because...
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Harold was absolutely right in so much as we need to get with the times when it comes to people with disabilities. Fact is, it is a condition. It is one facet of a person's life. It is not something contagious. It is not something to be feared. It is something we must learn to understand. It is something that once understood, we can learn what a person's all about. Only by getting to know that person can we have a basis to say what their condition is and what it means to them. Fact is, if we go in and we assume that a disability means this or that, yes, of course we're going to shy away from such people because we'll be living with the myths, never growing beyond that perception that says, I know all of this because I read it online. But that is a very high-risk proposition, folks. If we don't take the time to understand what a person with a disability can really accomplish, odds are they'll never be given the right tools, the right opportunities to accomplish it. It's up to each of us to stand beside these good people and say, I believe in you. I support your right to be here, your right to create, your right to learn. And I am going to be that person who doesn't just put on the public face of embracing diversity. I'm going to be that someone who provides a meaningful opportunity. Now, Harold worked in a lot of support capacities with the Learning Disabilities Association. I got to tell you, folks, seeing those good folks come together, you've never seen a better time in your life, because they're not sitting around discussing their condition, who has it worse, or which symptom is worse. No, they're just living as anyone would, among friends, sharing a laugh, sharing a meal, just enjoying themselves, which is as it should be. Because, fact is, even if a person has a disability, that's one part of who they are. But it's not the focus. It is not the all-encompassing factor all the time. Does it call for some modifications to how a person learns or does their job? Yes, it can. But I maintain to all of you folks, these are not insurmountable things. There is no condition worse than prejudice or ignorance in this world. There's no more high-risk proposition than saying, I'm quote-unquote normal, and I'm going to hold on to that with everything I got, and deny opportunities to another. That is no human being's place or right. But for those who truly believe in the strength of a person with a disability, if you go looking for it, you'll find it very quickly. You'll find they are strong, capable, emotional, hopeful people with dreams, goals, all their own. Even, as Harold said, unique personalities. Because the bottom line is, they are a person. Every person has something special, something unique. And understanding that is the first step towards building a bridge of connection. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Are you a driven, motivated person who is really passionate about something? Over here at The Lance, we can give you an opportunity to voice your passions to your fellow students and the entire community. Whether your passion is in sports, the arts, or general news, we have a place for you to contribute. Anyone interested in becoming an intern reporter for The Lance should contact Editor-in-Chief Jolene Perron via email at editor@uwindsorlance.ca, by phone at 519-253-3000, extension 3909, or just stop by the Lance Newsroom sometime Monday to Friday between 10 and 4. We're located on the north side of the CAW Center basement, just past the book return line at the UN Bookstore.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Harold Cousins, who shared his experiences with the Learning Disabilities Association. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Josie Matty. She'll be telling us all about her experience with wheelchair tennis. So tell me a little bit about wheelchair tennis.
What would you like to know specifically about tennis in Ontario?
Yes.
Okay. So the Ontario Wheelchair Sports Association, the OWSA, we govern four sports throughout the province, and wheelchair tennis is one of those four sports, and that's from across the province. So any clubs, any programs, anyone who is interested in playing the sport, coaching the sport, getting involved in the sport in any way, we're kind of their, ideally, their first point of contact for getting involved in the sport, so that we can kind of either help them get set up with equipment, whether it's a wheelchair, or letting them know about local clubs that offer wheelchair tennis programs, anything like that.
So for the sport itself, mm-hmm. is there any modified equipment that's used?
Yes. So the only major difference between wheelchair tennis and able-bodied tennis is just the use of the sport wheelchair. So the rackets are the same, the balls are the same. Tennis, like the court dimensions are the same. So the major difference is just the use of the wheelchair. But then also the rules are a little bit different. So in able-bodied tennis, it's one bounce. For wheelchair tennis, you get two bounces of the ball.
So are there any challenges with the sport itself?
I would say, accessibility is always just a major challenge in general, whether it's accessible facilities, as a lot of tennis clubs are older, but also a lot of the kind of the temporary winter bubbles aren't wheelchair accessible, which is a problem for anyone wanting to play wheelchair tennis. So finding accessible facility space, I would say, is definitely a major challenge. And then throughout Ontario, just ideally, like, we'd love to see more people playing the sport. So I would say low participation numbers is also just quite a major challenge.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the sport, has mm-hmm. there been any success moment you've witnessed?
Oh, for sure. I think we have great partnerships, especially in Ontario and in Canada, with any of our athlete ambassadors and also Tennis Canada. They've been very supportive of kind of helping to grow the sport, raise awareness, raise the profile. And I think something was really great over the past summer at the Toronto Parapan Am Games was the bronze medal won by our two Canadian guys. So I think that was definitely a great moment to see kind of growth in the sport, but also just a lot of excitement surrounding the sport. And it helps that one of the athletes, Joel Demby, is actually an Ontario athlete as well. So that's that was pretty cool for us.
So how do you go about spreading the word about the work you do?
So we do everything we can on our end as a nonprofit organization. That is a little bit difficult considering our limited resources. So we do rely a lot on partnerships, essentially, to kind of just try to get the word out as much as possible, whether that is through clubs, whether that is through Tennis Canada, any of our coaches, anything like that. So we're actually pretty lucky. We got to certify, I think it was 12 or 16 new wheelchair tennis coaches back in March. So we're hoping that they kind of take back their knowledge to their local clubs, get interested in kind of running more adaptive programming, and then coming to us for any of the sessions that we run as well. So something really cool that we do are what we call have-a-go days. And they're essentially kind of like one-time sessions that we do throughout a day just to get people kind of trying out the sport for the first time. We'll come in to a local club or a school or a community center or something like that. We'll provide all the equipment, including the chairs, the rackets, balls, net, really everything. And then we'll provide a facilitator or an instructor to kind of just go through the basics with anybody wanting to try out the sport. Hoping to kind of gain a little bit more awareness there.
So you mentioned the association runs some other programs.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about those?
Yeah, for sure. So as I mentioned, the four sports that we govern, so that is wheelchair athletics, wheelchair basketball, wheelchair tennis, and wheelchair rugby. So essentially anything having to do with those sports from the grassroots level all the way to kind of a high-performance competitive level is overseen by us. So we do a lot of kind of outreach and first contact programming through the National Bridging the Gap program. So we actually have a coordinator who looks after all of that, and she works with kind of like healthcare rehabilitation agencies, municipalities, schools, to run those sessions, or kind of to help to try to start kind of like drop-in or temporary, like short-term programming, and then hopefully with the idea of filtering any athletes who are interested in kind of continuing the sport on a long-term basis, we would direct them to any of our existing clubs. And then same thing with any of our other sports. We just work directly with coaches and existing clubs, or really anyone wanting to get involved in the sport as much as we can, to get stuff started in communities or municipalities that might not have a club that already exists. So there's a lot of kind of transfer of knowledge and sharing of resources throughout the province to try to start stuff in, especially in communities that don't already have existing adaptive sport programs.
So if you could send any one message about the need for these programs, what would you say?
Just that they exist, that they are out there, and it's just a matter of connecting with us, especially about really anything. If anyone wants to start getting involved in the sport, or just has any questions about wheelchair sports in general, then we are kind of the best first contact place to come to, so that we can share our resources and share our knowledge. But just because there are a lot of options there, so we want to make sure that everyone knows that there are options for different wheelchair sports and adapted sports throughout the province.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
But yeah, no problem.
If you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
When she mentioned that the participation numbers could be better, it struck me as a great tragedy, in so much as disability sport is very freeing. It's very much about the expression of human strength. It allows these great athletes to go out there, enjoy their game, just do what they love to do. The fact is, people with disabilities do need to exercise. They do need to keep themselves as healthy as possible as well. Fact is, disability sport, it's an equal competition to its able-bodied equivalent. Anyone who's ever seen a disability sports match will tell you, it takes a lot of energy, a lot of endurance, and a lot of training. The difference simply comes down to a matter of public awareness and representation. The fact is, disability sport, it's run every night of the week. But unless it's something big, like the Special Olympics, the Paralympics, you don't tend to hear about it, which I do find to be great tragedy. Fact is, these people, they go out there, they push themselves to reach their best, to reach the top of their game, as any athlete would. And we as a society should take the time to recognize not only the strength of these people, but that this is just something for any sports fan out there. Something as high energy, as fast-paced, and as enduring as any able-bodied sport. Most people would look at a game like tennis and assume it was just run out of a basic wheelchair. They would assume it would be slow and cumbersome. The fact is, there are specific chairs designed for athletic motion, just to keep it interesting, keep the game paced. It is not about bending the rules for these people. Josie mentioned in the interview, the rules are essentially the same. Meaning, to win, you have to push yourself, you have to give it your all. We're not giving anybody an unfair advantage. Think about it. They're out there against someone of roughly equal ability, which you would find in able-bodied sports. No one goes into it knowing who's going to win. And honestly, even if you did know, it's still a matter of how do they get there? How do they outthink and outplay their opponent? But what I love about disability sport is these players tend to have a genuine respect for each other, each other's abilities. There's a credo in certain disability athletic circles that goes, let me win, but if I can't, let me be brave in the attempt. Isn't it funny how we as a society keep getting a steady diet of vanilla when it comes to sports coverage? Look at a traditional sports page. Tell me there's an equal amount of disabilities coverage, women's coverage, whatever minority group. Fact of the matter is, We can't just have the same diet of Team A plays Team B over and over again. Yes, different players, different years, but in my opinion, it simply limits us too much. This very wise person recently reminded me, vanilla's fine, but after a while, you want some Neapolitan. You want some variety. The fact is, these sports, these athletes, whether it be women, people with disabilities, people of a different ethnic background, fact is, they should be given the same glory, if you will, as any other athlete. A few years ago, I had the privilege of interviewing a member of the Paralympic Committee who talked to me about the strength of people with disabilities in athletics. But he told me the great tragedy is these athletes, they can go out, hit their stride, become a master of their game, and yet receive next to no endorsements, next to no fair representation. And yes, we've all heard cases of people who have just abused the system. A person with a disability who used performance-enhancing steroids. We've all heard that case. We love to jump on it because it's a scandal. Truth is, we shouldn't be looking at it like that. We should see anyone who enters in sport as a great athlete. Don't go looking for a person's downfall. Go looking for what they have accomplished, what they can accomplish, their gifts, their training. Fact is, a person with a disability can just astound out there, doing their thing. But it's up to us as a society to remember it has to be a balance. I'm not saying that we should exclude able-bodied sports coverage. A lot of people love it, and I can respect that. But I'm saying we should not assume that is the end-all, be-all. We should not say to ourselves that this is all there is. These great athletes are the only great athletes. Because, simply, that's willful blindness. That's saying to ourselves that we know everything about a given topic. It's impossible. Nobody knows everything about anything. If you consider all the different types of a thing, all the factors that led up to it, that's simply why we should look beyond the obvious, look beyond the surface. Don't assume that just because you don't see people with disabilities or women or people from developing countries out there playing, that there aren't any. At that point, all you can assume is people haven't taken the proper note. They haven't taken the time to see that these athletes are people of strength, are people even of creativity. Because for a person with a disability to be out there, to actually find a way to modify the equipment so it's effective and doesn't detract from the game, that is very inventive. It's a matter of ingenuity to craft a wheelchair for speed and for precision, just to make it work. Because once you're out there seeing the game, the fruits of their labor are obvious. Because you're going to see some high energy, high octane stuff. The fact of the matter is, all athletes, no matter what gender, background, condition, all are entitled to consideration, respect. We as a society do need to get more involved. Josie had absolutely the right point. More can be done. But it all comes down to the individual. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.